Hey everybody, this is the first installment of our new segment for the Lone Star Capital Podcast, Founders Insights. This is going to be a solo podcast series where I'm going to be kind of going back to my roots, if you will, of just doing videos and podcasting solo. So the point of it is to be a bit shorter. So for those that don't want to consume or don't have the time to consume an hour-long podcast and the going back and forth and whatnot, the more fun and exciting podcast, this is the more nitty-gritty solo pod Founders Insights, where I'm going to go a little bit deeper into some of the numbers, risk concepts, and talk about what I want to talk about, and hopefully get you educated, get you excited about investing more in multifamily real estate. So without further ado, for this first episode of Founders Insights, we're here at our property Azul Apartments, which is adjacent to Park at Champion Forest. These are two adjacent properties that we own in the northwest pocket of Houston. And I'm sorry if you are listening to this and not watching this on YouTube, you're missing out on the beautiful brand new pool that we just installed. So if you see behind me, this is a great pool. We've got some pool furniture set up and whatnot just in time for summer. We're recording this in March. We'll be releasing this in just a couple days. So you're hearing this live in real time as far as putting this pool in. I'm honestly super impressed and amazed that our team this quickly and with the budget that we allocated have been able to add this amenity to the property. This property is a 2020 built asset, as you can see from the buildings, very high quality buildings, quaint, nice little deal, 96 units. And as we've talked about this deal before, it's a perfect deal for us because 96 units is a quite awkward deal size for a company to come in and manage because it's not big enough to really have a big full-time staff. So it puts your payroll in an awkward situation. Well, the benefit for us is that we own Park at Champion Forest next door, which is 232 units. And that gives us plenty of scale that we're able to combine both assets into a 300 plus essentially community, and we're able to manage them together. So that made us the unique best buyer for this asset. And of course, the benefits of being focused in a particular market are that you get these types of looks. This property was not marketed. The broker that was retained by the seller to sell this asset, who is not a multifamily player, might I add, because if Dasha, you turn the camera this way, there's a gas station here because the owner, former owner of Azul Apartments, was actually a gas station developer, and he had this extra land here, so he built the multifamily with it. His family, his kids didn't really want the multi, so he was looking to sell it off. The broker, knowing that we own directly next door, picked up the phone, and who do you think he called, right? Called us. And so therein lies the value of being dedicated to a particular market, having the relationships and the expertise. So just wanted to give this quick update on adding the pool here at Azul. Great amenity addition, right? Given that it's less than 100 units, you can't really afford to have a full comprehensive amenity set, but from surveying the tenants and understanding the area, we knew that what was holding this property back, which really wasn't much given the fact that it's a 2020 vintage, nice area, obviously brand new, but the only thing that was holding it back was that it didn't have a pool. And so rather than having tenants here go all the way across the way to park to enjoy the pool amenity over there, we had the budget and the room to build a pool here. So exciting update. Speaking of Houston, being that we're here, I wanted to share some up-to-date insights about why Houston. We get asked all the time, why do you guys invest in Texas? Why do you guys invest in Houston? In particular, given that the bulk of our $600 million portfolio is in Houston. And there's a couple answers for it. You know, one very simple answer is inertia. We first started in Houston. We bought our first asset actually not too far from here in Houston, sold it a couple years ago. And from that first acquisition, we just built upon it and added more and more deals. And that scale kind of begot more scale. And then that also, that concentrated scale allowed us to bring property management in-house. And so that inertia really propelled us to great success in the local market. But on a macro basis, why Houston? There's so many things to love about this market. Houston is the fourth largest city in the country, and it's fast growing. I mean, it's topping the charts every single year for population growth and job growth. Neck and neck with DFW. Now, DFW is a bit smaller of a market. So for DFW, it's a bit more impressive on a percentage basis to be having such strong job growth as compared to Houston, but nevertheless, Houston is right there with Dallas as far as how impressive and robust of a job market it is. Now, the downside of Houston as compared to DFW when you're talking about labor markets is, of course, the energy dependence here in Houston. So it's no secret that Houston is the energy capital of the world. We've got major oil and gas firms, there's petrochemical going on. So it's mostly midstream, downstream stuff happening here, which is less volatile. But nevertheless, when oil's booming, Houston's booming. When oil's down, Houston's feeling the pain. And while Houston has certainly worked its way towards decoupling itself from the energy industry, there's still, as the economists' best guess believe, about a 20% exposure to the energy industry. And that encapsulates not just direct energy jobs, but it encapsulates the jobs that are related to energy, such as all the accountants and consultants and peripheral jobs that serve the energy jobs here in the Metroplex. So with that being said, though, you know, of course, let me also make a statement about the other big difference between DFW and Houston. In DFW, you've got hail, but in Houston, you've got flooding. And everyone remembers Hurricane Harvey. We had Hurricane Ike, and that is kind of imprinted in people's minds. And yes, of course, there is more weather risk in Houston than there is in DFW. So now that I've laid out kind of the differences, which is what I want to focus on in today's video or episode, we're kind of having a crisis of identity here. Is this a podcast or is this a video? I think it can be both. But the difference here that we're talking about are the downsides of Houston as compared to DFW. Both are incredible labor markets. Both have strong population growth. They're not going anywhere. Houston is more affordable. So on a long-term basis, it arguably has more headroom and is attracting more families who are relocating to a lower cost of living. But the downsides, of course, are a less robust and diversified job market as compared to DFW and the weather risk. Now, with those differences outlined, let me get to the crux of the matter, which is DFW and Houston are priced radically differently, not just from a price per unit basis, because that could be easily answered by DFW having higher rents. So if you have higher rents in DFW, then it would make sense that you have higher price per unit in DFW. Let's say two 1980s vintage deals that are roughly the same. In Dallas, you might be looking at $120,000 per unit, and in Houston, that might be a $90,000 per unit deal. But it's not just because of that. You also have a valuation difference, and this is really what matters. It's the cap rate that matters. And in DFW, cap rates are almost 50 basis points tighter than they are in Houston. And that is a massive difference. So I don't care if you are a DFW fanboy and you love Dallas and you want to own property in Dallas and you think it's the best place in the world to invest. I agree with you. And guess what? The world agrees with you. Mark Similichap and IPA's 2024 market report ranked DFW as the number one market in the country to invest in. So guess what? It's no secret. Everybody knows about it and you're paying for it. So if you're gonna play in the DFW space, you have to be ready to pay up and be competitive because it's a competitive market. And number two, inherently, you have to be willing to accept lower returns. With lower risk comes lower projected returns. Now, the world views Houston to be a bit higher risk, and with that comes higher projected returns. Something I often say is, if you wanna invest based on the numbers, you invest in Houston. If you wanna invest based on the story, you invest in Dallas, because pretty much all over DFW, you've got these amazing stories, corporate relocations, job growth this, and amazing expansion that, and all this investment. And Houston has those stories too, but guess what? The numbers are a little more down to earth in Houston. Wider cap rates, you don't have to have as crazy of assumptions, because if you want to buy in DFW, you have to assume a very aggressive picture when it comes to rent growth. In Houston, you know, both markets have experienced great rent growth. Both markets are projected to experience strong rent growth. Obviously, DFW more than Houston, but you don't have to get as aggressive on your projections when you're playing in the Houston market. So, am I making this video to pound the table and say that Houston is the better market to invest in than DFW? Maybe. But what I'm really saying is that nothing is free. And if you are investing in the best market in the country, like DFW, you have to be prepared to do what comes along with the territory, right? You have to be prepared for super competitive deals, lower returns, and being more aggressive with your underwriting. And you're gonna have to make your business plan sing and work out perfectly in order for your returns to go well. Now, I'm not saying that Houston is a slouch and there's super overlooked opportunities. It's a competitive market in its own right, but there's a big cap rate disparity, and the numbers are just a little bit more favorable, maybe even a good amount more favorable in Houston, which makes us really attracted to the market. And we believe is why we're able to find success, because if you're able to kind of cut through the noise and actually find good deals that make sense in Houston that are perhaps more removed from weather risk, more removed from the energy exposure, and still have good fundamentals, then you're going to be in really good shape. One last comment about these two markets is the supply pipeline. So Houston, you know, I bump into people in the elevator and they go, oh, you invest in Houston? They can build skyscrapers or a church right next to a strip club, right? There's no zoning. Development is crazy. Well, guess what? Even with no zoning, there really is zoning, and there's reasonable development and the path of progress. It's all coherent for the most part. And so guess what? There's actually a less supply pipeline in Houston than there is in Austin, than there is in Dallas. Believe it or not, Houston is 3 times the size of Austin, but there's more multifamily construction going on in Austin than there is Houston right now, right? So cranes are in the sky in Austin, not as much in Houston, specifically in many suburban pockets of Houston, like where we are here. And like many of the properties that we buy and have been buying recently, there's a very minimal supply pipeline, which makes us feel very comfortable in actually projecting out rent growth. Because when you are getting pounded with a supply pipeline, those new assets are going to compete against yours, there's going to be concessions, and it's going to take time for the market to absorb. Now, we know Dallas is the behemoth, Dallas is the best market, so no matter how much supply historically has been thrown at DFW over the last 20 years, DFW has absorbed it and has kept chugging along. So I'm sure that will continue to be the case, but the country right now on a national level is experiencing more multifamily supply in 24 and 25 than it hasn't seen this much supply since the 70s. So this is a big deal, and that's why we focus so much on the supply picture when we're looking at submarkets and particular assets to acquire. Next topic for today's podcast is we actually had a very interesting situation happen with an investor recently. This is a very big investor, and it's a new investor relationship. This investor invested $1 million into one deal with us and a big check on another investment as well. So with such a big investment like that, I assume this person is serious. I mean, they're obviously successful, and I assume that they're, you know, fairly knowledgeable about the space. And I'm not saying this person isn't, but those are my assumptions, right? And here's the story. The point of the story is we all have blind spots, and we don't know what the pictures are in someone else's head, and we don't know what they're thinking. We don't know unless we ask what it is in their heart that they want. What do they want, right? I was shocked when I saw an email come through from this investor, and this email said, yeah, well, Lone Star's monthly distributions haven't been consistent, so I don't think I'm going to invest with them again. I was shocked. I was taken aback because I'm thinking to myself, what do you mean inconsistent distributions? We're sending out checks like clockwork. We've got monthly cash flow. It's the same 5% for the first few months of the deal. Everything's going to plan. It's a stabilized asset. It's a low-risk business plan. What's going on here? And I dig into the issue, and it's the investor took issue with literally the day when the distribution was hitting his bank account. So here I am, busy doing my thing. I've got a lot going on, obviously, running Lone Star, and not even thinking that an investor caring about whether they receive their distribution on the 28th of February or March 4th, to me, it was just kind of inconsequential. But here I am, I'm wrong, right? And I don't care what the point is. If an investor is investing $1 million into the deal, well, guess what? Who's right? They are. So we took this issue very seriously, of course, and we actually recently brought on a controller onto the team who's very sharp, is going to really institutionalize a lot of our accounting, reporting, distributions, everything. So this is a welcome change anyway, but with our controller and with our accounting team, which we also brought accounting in-house starting 2024, which is also another big benefit. But with these changes, we're now implementing a system where we're going to make sure that we get it right. And we're going to make sure that those distributions are sent out at the same time every single month. We're going to make sure that they're sent out earlier rather than later if it's not on time, because we'd rather wow and surprise investors and not make them upset. If we set the expectation for monthly distributions, we need to hit that. Not every firm does monthly distributions. The industry standard is quarterly. So we're going above and beyond to provide a better service to our investors. Because I always say, if we can make our investors smile 12 times a year instead of 4, it's a no-brainer. But if this decision is now causing headaches and making investors feel uncertain, right? If you've ever seen our founders video, I talk about how we're in the business of helping our investors sleep well at night. Well, if an investor's worried about when their distribution's coming, if their distribution's coming, that's not helping them sleep well at night. So this is an example of us thankfully receiving feedback, because imagine if the investor just had that feeling and then never said anything about it. It wouldn't give us the opportunity to improve. And that's the beauty of criticism. That's the beauty of being able to grow and being open. So low-hanging fruit, that's an easy level up for the firm. So we're gonna continue to make incremental improvements like this, especially now that we have the controller on board. I'm sure you'll meet him soon. But yeah, that concludes my thoughts for the episode 1 of Founders Insights. And if you found this helpful, please share it with a friend. And frankly, passive investors who are looking for good real estate investments, such as the ones that we sponsor at Lone Star Capital, they're the ones that need to hear this most, but they're usually not the ones that are listening to podcasts, that are consuming this sort of content. So if you have a passive investor friend that needs to hear this, please share it with them. Thanks.